Accession number 11261, Reel 5.
And say it.
Peruvalich.
Dr. Peruvalich, Reel 5.
I don't know whether I said that we went to Austria. No, we didn't go to Austria.
No, we hadn't got there yet, had we?
No, this was, we're talking about the early autumn of 1944, when the Red Army was approaching it. They were already in Romania and in Hungary, and they were crossing the Danube, and we knew that, you know, that was the end of the struggle at that time. So I also mentioned that we were a day's march ahead of them, although, I mean, they could have done it much quicker, but we were doing it by foot. So we could have easily been rounded up and caught. Anyway, we managed to get away, and then from there we got on to Slovenia, which was, you know, the western part of Yugoslavia, the westernmost part of Yugoslavia. And this was in October of 44. Now, we were hoping that by withdrawing to that particular area, we would be able to regroup all the nationalist, royalist forces. The Slovenes were also occupied by the Germans, but they had the National Council, which was in a way acting on behalf of the whole of Yugoslavia. We were hoping to create an oasis there, you know, in cooperation with the you know, Slovene Domobrans and nationalist forces who were resisting communism quite effectively, and to help the National Council of Slovenia to establish itself, to invite King Peter to come to join us there, and then to use that as the base for a push eastwards and so liberate the country. Because by then we realized that there was no hope of any Allied landing on the Adriatic coast, which was a great disappointment. But on the other hand, we realized also that they were very much sold to Tito and communism, and they were doing, in a way, lots of things that Stalin knew would be beneficial to, you know, a communist society, a new communist setup in Europe. But of course, neither Churchill nor Roosevelt or Truman at that time realized the stratagem of it, of that all, because Stalin, with all his wiles, was a very clever politician, and he knew how to exploit every possible situation in his own interests. And of course, at that time, Tito's interests were his, because he was hoping that Tito would be a stooge, that he would more or less do what the rest of them did, like Gomulka and, you know, others in Poland, Czechoslovakia, and, you know, Hungary. They were tools in Stalin's hands or other communist leaders' hands. But then for some reason, Tito sort of realized that perhaps they were expecting too much from him, and they expecting him to do them homage, where perhaps to the extent that it wasn't fully justified. I mean, after all, he did contribute to a considerable extent by his own efforts and fights, and you know, you got to give credit for that. But as I say, I still stand by what I said earlier, that Yugoslavia would not have become a communist state had it not been for the external intervention, in this case mainly British and of course the American. But I mean, I know Americans wanted the landing to be made on the Adriatic coast, but Churchill was advised against it. And he accepted it. So it was scrapped. That plan was scrapped. There were one or two abortive attempts at landing, but only very minor forces, and that came to nothing. The communists already knew about this, so they ambushed them and more or less, you know, sort of nipped them in the bud. Because again, as I said early on, They had their informers and friends in these various important centers in Cairo and elsewhere, and London. So they knew, and Philby was at that time in the Foreign Office. We know what happened to him and what he did, and how much of valuable information was passed on through his particular channels. It's anybody's guess, but perhaps one day these things will become known. But even then I'm doubtful, because now you see the sort of, you know, secrecy extension is carried on almost indefinitely. 50 years, 75 years, 100 years, some of the documents relating to transactions between sort of Tito's representatives and the British government are, what, not to be open to the public for 100 years in the Cabinet Office. Why is Mrs. Thatcher allowing that? Why should these things be kept quiet? Who is to be compromised? Or whose reputation will be damaged? There must be some very, very worried people there. And you see, Mr. Vlahovic has done a lot of research about this, and he knows a lot more about this, but he's been several times, you know, doing a lot of research at the Public Records Office, and he was amazed to see that the files, which he had seen a few years before, had been either changed completely or new material entered into them, and the previous, what could be compromising material, has disappeared. Why? On whose orders? Where is it now? Are there any traces of it? That's why I'm doubtful that even at this stage, much could be revealed by looking through these documents. So we are fighting an uphill struggle, and it's not going to be easy. That's why I mentioned to you on the phone the other day, if we could have some public inquiry, and the sooner the better, whether by the British representatives or what you suggested, by some international body, like European, it would be all for the good. But will it happen? If the British government is keeping those documents secret, they're not accessible for public scrutiny, what can you do? Nothing. It's a guesswork, and not more than guesswork. And in many of these things, it will remain guesswork till we are dead, we are gone. And by then, well, how much interest will be left?
Well, you now tell me about your experience in Austria, and we'll put this on a record that people can hear. You were saying that you were now, towards the end of 1944, you were in this area of Slovenia.
Yeah.
With the hopes of forming a sort of interim government which was going to push eastwards and hopefully, you know, become the government of...
That the king would come.
Yes.
But at that time, you see, the Churchill was so profoundly sold on Tito that he, well, not more or less, but I mean, he flagrantly bullied King Peter into accepting Tito. And when King Peter resisted accepting Tito as his sort of representative in Yugoslavia, or the leader of the Yugoslav people, Churchill said, well, and MacLean quotes that in his book, Eastern Approaches. Well, if you don't recognize Tito, we will act as if you had recognized him. In other words, we don't give it a damn what you think about it. You may disagree. And so King Peter was. I know he wasn't a very strong character. He wasn't the best of kings.
Did he come back to the area of Slovenia at this time?
No, he wasn't allowed. He was demoted. I mean, Churchill simply said to him, we are going to act as if you had agreed. In other words, from now on, his main dealings and sole dealings were through Tito and Subašić, who was sent as king's representative to Yugoslavia, who eventually became a stooge in their hands, and that was it.
Would there have been any partisans in Slovenia at time, when you were setting up, when this area was
There were, yes, very, very strong contingent, yes.
So were they fighting you?
Oh, yes, we were fighting. In fact, we had some severe fights there. I remember once we, you know, were chasing them. I think in most cases we chased them, they then chasing us. We came across one of their well-established and well-camouflaged printing establishment with everything that possibly you can. I remember, you know, we went there. We found it, and in fact, they had been there and only a very short time while, because they were still leftovers of a meal and, you know, sort of caught food left. So they must have just escaped as we were coming, and we destroyed the place. We, you know, sort of, you know, put bombs to it, so everything was left in, you know, sort of rack and ruins. Oh yes, they were fighting us, and we were and there, not just on holiday, but we were showing that they were not exactly in power as yet, not in full control. So they were more or less on the retreat everywhere at that time. And later on, you know, that was the, you know, early in spring of 45, we were sent out, the three regiments of us, we were sent into the heart of Slovenia, which was near Kočevje, to not only to fight the partisans, but also to relieve the retreat of some of the Chetnik groups which were coming through Bosnia, Jurišić and others. And that was really the main purpose of this action. I think it took place at the beginning of, sometimes at the beginning of April. And we carried on. We stayed there for about a month, you know, having various encounters. Some of these we won. So in some cases we had to retreat because, again, we were outnumbered. And the partisans were very powerful. They had all this modern equipment and weaponry, which was delivered to them by the British allies, mainly on our at our eyes, you know, we're watching it as it was happening. But still, we fought wherever we could. We lost quite a few of our fighters, and of course, it was coming to the end of the war. We realized that there was no hope of allies coming or joining with them, or being rescued in any way. So we had to make our retreat towards Austria. And it was there that we had to fight again our way, practically to the last moment. And even then we were sort of crossing into Austria, there were still already partisan units there with tanks, and, you know, they started and tried to stop us and try to arrest us and send us back, but we didn't stand for that, we didn't allow that, although there was a great deal of intimidation. Anyway, we eventually met with the British Army, and they knew who we were and where we were coming from, and, you know, there had been contacts before with them.
What was their attitude towards you when you first met the British? Would that have been...
Very reserved, very ambiguous. Very ambiguous. You see, many of them didn't know what was happening. We had been accused as collaborators and traitors and quislings and, you know, all possible, you know, national enemies. So there were many of them were bemused, but at the same time, there were people already very skeptical about the communists, and the partisans have already started behaving very arrogantly and haughtily. They were claiming the whole of that province of Carinthia as their own. Of course, they had just managed to get there, I think, a few hours before the British Fifth Army arrived. So they had already become disenchanted with them. They had a few skirmishes, well, not real fights, but, you know, some unpleasantness. But they were already getting ready to fight them if, you know, if it came to it, because it looked very much as if there would be shooting war between the Tito's partisans and the British forces which were just arriving. Then, of course, that's where Toby Law comes in, and what I suspect was a bargain. Hochevar and, you know, others were there negotiating with them. And I think, right, we'll do this, we'll withdraw, and also, but you give us these people that we are after. And of course, they were determined to get rid of all the possible potential ideological enemies. That's what they really wanted to get rid of. They wanted to stem out every and to exterminate every possible opposition. Now, all right, if we have war criminals, I mean, like the German war criminals, or whatever it is, there should have been, you know, some tribunal. There should have been some investigation to see what crimes one has committed and how many people massacred and where, and why. Oh, no. It was execution on the spot in many cases. Or as it happened with most of my friends, two or three days later, you know, when they brought us in the heart of Slovenia, in Kočevje. And that's why I was one of the lucky few to escape, because thousands of others perished.
Yes, I want to ask you a lot about that. Going back to this journey when you arrived in Austria, and the British attitude to you, were you disarmed at that stage?
Well, not immediately. But when we went in, you know, I don't know how, again, exactly how far, how many miles, whatever it was. And there was a point when we were told to lay off our arms, and then we were disarmed. But what chilled our blood was that we saw Tito's officers there as well. We knew they were allies and all this, and working together hand in gloves. But we didn't think that they would be there, taking part in this shameful episode. And so, yes, we were disarmed there, and then from there we were sent to this place, Viktring, or Vetrinje, which was, again, I'm not sure how far it was, but a few miles anyway. And that's where we stayed 10, 12 days until the repatriation started.
What sort of groups were at Viktring, you know, apart from the Chetniks? Were there other groups of Yugoslav people?
There were quite a few thousand of Slovene Domobrans, the Slovene Domobrans that we've been working together. I'm not sure. Yeah, they must have come about the same time with us. And there were a few hundred Ustashes. Again, they must have sort of crossed the border about the same time. There were various other groups. It's difficult to know, but it was something in the region of 20,000, possibly more. So who were the others? I mean, there must have been quite a number of German prisoners of war, although we had no contact with them. Again, we were, you know, keeping close within our units, and I mean, all of our concern was with our, you know, our own people. So we didn't take much notice of, you know, who else was there or what else. And there was no time to either start socializing or inquiring who was there, because it was really fateful time. We didn't know what was going to happen, and we didn't know what to expect. We knew that Tito was there. They were coming often to the camp gates and trying to get in, and to intimidate our people, to frighten them, to even to take some people away, which we resisted. And, you know, the British helped in this respect. But apart from that, I can't really say much else happened. We started organizing ourselves, and I described this here, and Tolstoy quotes a couple of pages in his book from there. This was still from my manuscript. And that's where the whole thing started, or started again.
Was there any attempt by the British to sort of screen the Yugoslav people, to pick out those that had actually worked with the Germans?
None whatsoever.
Like the Ustashi that you...
Ustashi. None whatsoever. No, there was no attempt. I mean, it could have been done, as I said, to... to the lawyer or the defense counsel, for the Aldington trial, it could have been done. I mean, it could have been done by simply looking, not even needing the language, just seeing there were so many women, there were many so children. You know, there were children under the age of 16. There were about 300 of them sent back with us, and there were so many old people, and there were so many people in uniform, which incidentally was our Serbian royalist uniform, not the German. Now, the Ustashes were in the sort of kind of German uniform. Even the Slovenes were wearing similar kind of uniform, similar to German, although they had some sort of special, features about them. But ours was one of the very few, because we took our oath to the king. We had our royalist banners, and we celebrated King's birthday. Although the Germans threatened the hell for this, and some of our people were, friends were interned for this, but nonetheless we did, and we made it perfectly clear that this is our king. We are their slaves, but we are not going to betray our own tradition and our own loyalties, which were to Serbia and Yugoslavia, but of course Serbia was now one that existed for us. Yugoslavia was dismembered. And I think Germans eventually came to realize that, yes, we meant it, and they started respecting in a way. I mean, after all, they are, a civilized nation. So I don't think they could be so stupid as not to say, we just want to turn this into our sort of stooges. No. We had a group. There was a group of, I don't know how many, 30 or 40 people who were formed about the same time, who I think they donned German uniforms and eventually ended up at the Eastern Front. But they had nothing to do with Nedić or our movement or at all. In fact, some of them finished. We had to take some of them to trials, and I'm not sure what happened, but they didn't meet with a very pleasant end. But otherwise, you see, these were people who were dedicated to their own nation, to their own country, which was suffering so much. And we just wanted to see what we can do to stave off the complete destruction and extinction.
Having been put in the camp at Viktrin, guarded by British, and you've explained how the partisans were outside trying to get in, did you have any sense of security, that you were safe there? I wonder how you felt. How long would you have been in this camp altogether?
I think I was one of those who left it earliest, obviously, so I have been there about 12, 13 days.
Mm-hmm. And did you feel secure while you were there?
Or was it more? Was it 14? Yes, we felt quite secure. We were given assurances that there was nothing to be afraid. The communist infiltrators or would-be infiltrators were not allowed to come in. And if anybody dared come in, they would be dealt with, briefly. I mean, they would be given good hiding. So I don't think there was any danger of that. And in fact, the last day or two, we were elated. As again, as I describe in my book here, our officers were invited to meet the English representative. They were told, yes, we are ready we are going to move tomorrow. They were given so many motorcycles, they were given so many cars. We were absolutely over the moon. They said, here we are now, allies are beginning to show the appreciation. And all that time, the plot was to lull us into this false security, because tomorrow we were going to be handed over.
Where were you told you were going?
Oh, we were told we were going to Italy. Yeah. Well, you see, I told you early on that we were in Slovenia for several months. At the beginning of April, we were sent on this action to the heart of Slovenia. About three regiments, about 3,000 people, roughly, I should say, 2,500. You know, I can't. The fighting units, the base of each regiment was left behind at in Istria, or Bistrica, around there. You know, in Istria, there were a number of places, you know, bases. There were also two other regiments. And the, you know, supply units and all that. So they were left there. And of course, while we were in Slovenia fighting against the communists, the pressure against these particular bases in Slovenia or Istria was becoming so unbearable, so they were forced to retreat towards Italy. And I think it was a few days before us, you know, I think it was the beginning of May, that they crossed Isonča, River, and there they were sort of accepted or received by the British units, and they were, you know, sort of based in a camp somewhere in Palmanova. So the center of our units was there with women and children of what you call camp dependents. With many of our friends and families, I mean, you know, some of my friends were married with, you know, with the children, so they were all in Italy. So we were told that we were going tomorrow to go to Italy to join those units. Now, again, we didn't know for certain whether they were still alive. I mean, rumors were circulating around. Yes, even in the camp, you know, because the communists had their own agents there, and they were very good in spreading rumors that all those people from Istria have been already handed over to Tito, and they have been already, you know, sent to Yugoslavia. So there was this confusion, this uncertainty, but nonetheless, we were still told, you're going to Italy. And we took it on its face value for what it was, and that was, and we're absolutely over the moon. You know, because that's what we wanted more than anything else. A, to join with our friends, to join with our families, those of us who had them, and, well, to be together. Because after all, we have been all those years. And, well, whatever happened, then it would happen to us as a whole, and not in different basins or different theaters. In different ways, decided by different commanders, and as it happened here, you had General Keitley, who was deciding what happened in Austria, but then you had General Murray, and you had various other leaders still in northern Italy, who were deciding otherwise. And of course, General Alexander was there, and it also depended what kind of information was fed to him. And in fact, there was no question of us creating any problem at that time, although there were, well, I think close to 1 million people in that area, which is quite a handful for anybody to deal with. But then the Americans were offering, as you may have seen from Tolstoy's book, to take the Cossacks, most of them, or all of them, I think, to their zone. Now, whether they would have been saved, I mean, after later on, some Cossacks were sent back from the American zone as well. So, I mean, it's no guarantee that would have been a better solution. They were also offering to have us elsewhere. So there was no need to start making an issue of that congestion there. But we were told, and the trick worked, that we would be sent to Italy, to northern Italy, or Venezia Giulia. So,
do you remember, could you tell me about the day that you were, you know, sent back?
Oh, the day was...
could you describe
vivid,
it
yes.
in detail, the first
The 24th of May. You see, I have described there. In fact, what goes on here, you'll see this, chapter 5, Flight to Freedom, chapter 2, Maria Ellen. Now, this was